From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 824, Fixing Problem Wi-Fi Devices Using Tonic with guest Ryan Woodings. Recorded Thursday, March 3rd, 2022. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Today, my guest, coming back for the second time, Ryan Woodings, who founded MetaGeek back in 2005 to create tools for visualizing Wi-Fi, such as the WiSpy Spectrum Analyzer and the InSSIDer, or Insider. Since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, Ryan has led MetaGeek in its focus on improving Wi-Fi management and troubleshooting for work from anywhere. And when he's not elbow deep in Wi-Fi, he's baking or trail running in the Boise foothills. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Richard. It's great to be back.
Great to be back. And my goodness, yes, everybody's home Wi-Fi in the past 2 years. I mean, and everybody's home rig. Your cameras are better. Your headphones are better. Like, we've all done a lot of Zooming and stuff. But yeah, when you had the whole family home and kids trying to homeschool and all of those things, you found out how good your Wi-Fi was in a big hurry.
And I found out that mine was not awesome.
Oh man. This is a sideline to, I'm not going to read this whole comment. This is from the show we did back in 2020 in the early days of the pandemic, when certainly tuning up Wi-Fi was important. That was episode 708, and it was part of that whole conversation we were having. I did a separate pandemic series. It's like, here are things that IT folks are dealing with, and fixing people's home Wi-Fi from a distance was certainly one of them. And the comment comes from SMF723. I'll presume that's not on the name on your birth certificate. And he said that he upgraded to Ubiquiti using UAC, AC Pro, the access points. And he put one in for a 3,000 square foot area, which to me seems a little small, and then struggled with the configuring. I don't consider Ubiquiti home Wi-Fi. Do you?
No. I mean, it's definitely more in the prosumer, small office kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they're great for that. But I think on a home, it's a little overkill.
I mean, for folks listening to this show that are to IT-minded, know the way around networking, this is a somewhat expensive product that has nice bells and whistles on it that are kind of fun for a home unit. But you really do have to know a fair bit about Wi-Fi to have success with it. And one of the complaints that SMF had there was that Ubiquiti rolled out a lot of poor quality updates a couple of years ago. I haven't had much problem with them lately, but I don't do auto update, nor should you, right? Like, I always wait for the update to come in, check the Reddit forums. How are people talking about this? Like, I'm happy to be last installing the latest firmware. But yeah, it's got good visualizations. I think it's appealing to people, but it's not a trivial thing to make work right.
No, and if you're on the IT minded and you maybe have it at work, then you have to configure it at home, and that's great. One of our coworkers has Ubiquiti at home, but he's very much on the Wi-Fi tech side, and he loves to have he has his enterprise network at home, his home network, his guest network. There's four different SSIDs going.
Yeah.
There's three access points, and he can tell immediately when his kids are on Nintendo Switch or FaceTime with grandma. He likes that stuff.
Yeah.
And Ubiquiti's cool for showing that, but for most home stuff, I mean, I have a TP-Link mesh system. I dropped in three nodes. Boom. Yep. It was easy.
Yeah, I've got a Ubiquiti in one house and a TP-Link in the other, and the TP-Link is less fuss. Like, that's something I would put into a relative's place. I would not put Ubiquiti into a relative's place. Because you put it in, you're responsible for care and feeding on it.
Yeah, and the TP-Link, it's basically just drop it and go.
Yeah, spend some time setting it up well once and then never think about it again. And then there's the whole aspect of granularizing your network to isolate your IoT things and what can get to the cloud and what can't, which is, I mean, well beyond the average consumer. And I think for even for a lot of IT folks, they struggle with what's the right way to do some of that stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of debate too, on like IoT. How do you get it connected in, and do you, you know, where do you isolate it out, things like that.
Right. How do you control that? I mean, it's interesting to say, and I've done this where all my IoT stuff is on a VLAN that normally does not have access to the cloud, but then there's update day. An update day, I change the configuration on that VLAN and then let those things all go and get firmware updates if they don't allow me to do it in a manual way. But again, there's moments where you sort of, then you get in a tangle or something goes wrong and you're trying to figure it out. It's like, no, regular people can't ever do this. This is hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's always that balance, I think, between, is it simple enough for normal people to do, mm-hmm. and is it secure?
Yeah.
The more secure you want it, the harder it's going to be to actually manage it, install it, keep it going.
Right. And then you deal with the poor quality software that is in some of these devices that, mm-hmm. you know, spits out random error messages that actually mean I can't call home and you're making me sad. But it's not the message that they're actually giving. It's all kinds of other random messages.
Yep.
Sideline conversation, really, but an interesting one because we are, you know, as IT folks, managing Wi-Fi in the office and managing our stuff at home. And maybe going more sophisticated. I do like experimenting with more secure things on myself before I put mm-hmm. them into the office in some ways. I'm still using YubiKeys myself, but I don't think I'd put them on anybody else yet. They're still too complicated and fussy.
Yeah, like you're saying, I mean, a lot of IT people are probably tinkering stuff at home in the office and then also managing coworker stuff. They might be also tinkering at home or have weird systems at home. And so how do you manage all of those different things?
Yeah.
If you have a coworker, I can't get on the internet. Well, what else do they have on their home system that's causing issues?
Yes.
What random IoT device do they have that just got owned?
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah. So. It's bad enough when everything's working normally, but if it's actually an exploited device, it's a whole other can of worms. Like how many machines have been botted? You know, what's actually going on in there? And SMF, thank you so much for your comment. And I'm sending a Run As Radio mug to you. And if you'd like a Run As Media mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or on LinkedIn or Facebook where I publish the shows. And if I read them there, I'll send you a mug. I sent you a mug, right?
Oh, yeah. It's an awesome mug.
It's a good mug.
It's a lot.
Yeah. It's good fun. And glad you got it. They come in 11 colors. What's the day job these days, friend? Because you guys have been working hard over there.
Yeah. So last time I talked to you, we were working on Signify for work from home.
Right.
And helping IT people get visibility into the home networks. We finished that, got it launched, and now we've been working on back towards the kind of the work office. How do we help IT better with the corporate Wi-Fi mm-hmm. now that people are actually going back to work and things? And so we kind of stepped back from our tools, and we've had a lot of different Wi-Fi tools over the years. Focused on layer one, you know, RF spectrum analysis, layer two into the packets, also some free tools. And basically we created a new tool that bundles it all together. It's called Tonic, and it does layer one spectrum analysis, layer two pack analysis with a lot of great visualizations that make it easier to follow the packets. Mm-hmm. One of our colleagues says, packets never lie. And we get to Wi-Fi. There's always, you know, weird Wi-Fi issues. And if you could understand what the packets are saying, you could understand the problem.
Yeah. I mean, this is where we end up with stuff like Wireshark and stuff, like trying to understand what's going on inside of those data streams.
Yeah. And Wireshark is a great example. It's such a powerful tool if you know how to configure it. It's kind of like with the Ubiquiti, right?
Yeah.
If you know how to configure it, it's awesome. But it's not targeted for Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
It handles all sorts of different protocols. And so we said, well, how do we make a tool that does what these people are trying to do with Wireshark. Mm-hmm. And a couple of times, you know, one of the main things people are trying to do when they're troubleshooting Wi-Fi is there's a client that won't roam properly. There's a client that has some issue.
Yep.
But how do you capture the packets for that client? How do you follow it if it roams and changes channel? These things get really complicated with current tools. And so with our new Tonic, what we said was, let's make sure we can select the client, follow that client, follow it on any channel that it goes to. And so we automatically adjust the adapters and do all the smarts in the back end to make it easy to track a client, and then not only track the client so we get all the packets, but we can say what are the main events that client is doing. So when the client associates, we pop up a little event, and then you can get the packets just for that association event. Or if it has a handshake, secure handshake, if it roams, mm-hmm. Working on more events, like if it goes to sleep, if it gets deauthenticated, all of these different events, we can just fire a little event And so then you don't have to search through the thousands and thousands of packets in Wireshark.
Right.
We'll say, here's the five packets that actually matter for you.
So how are you identifying a client? Is this like a MAC address or something? Or, you know, how do you say that's the device I want to follow?
Yeah. So this is part of the smarts we put in the Tonic, because in Wireshark, you have MAC address, you know, this MAC address A sent a packet to MAC address B.
Right.
It doesn't tell you who any of those are. And so one thing we do is we start saying, well, let's make sure we can identify the APs.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it sends out a beacon, we're like, that MAC address is an AP. What SSID is it on? Let's get some more information about it. We can even do some tricks in the back end based on what is in the beacon to identify the make and model of that AP.
Okay.
And so that just gives you some good context of, okay, well, that's, you know, this is the AP that it is. I know some information about that. And then we tie the client to that. So now we have a conversation of an AP and a client. And we're tracking the packets for that conversation.
And I got to think sometimes you're surprised at what AP that device chose to speak to. Like if I'm thinking about an office setup with 34, mm-hmm. you know, decent space, you know, several dozen APs, and you really want to follow them as they walk into the office because something bizarre is going on. You know, step one, it's like, why did it connect to that AP?
Yes. Yes. Very true. And so in our UI, we have it. You can either look at a table of different networks, SSID,
mm-hmm.
and then the APs that are on that network, and then you can drill down the clients that are connected to that AP. Or you can look at a table of all clients, and you can sort that by, you know, airtime that's used, signal strength. So, you know, show me the clients that are close to me.
How well were they doing? Yeah.
Yeah. And so that makes it pretty easy to click into the client, find the client you want. And then we show what channel it's on, what AP it's connected to, how much airtime it's taking. If you get deeper in the Wi-Fi, some of the things related to data rate, the MCS index, space, number of spatial streams, the channel width, this all kind of relates to the quality of its connection.
Right.
And then at that layer too, with the client layer, then we're showing here's the events that we have for that client. You know, it associated, it roamed, if it did a neighbor report.
Mm-hmm.
So neighbor reports are the things in Wi-Fi where basically if the client's signal isn't great, it'll ask its AP what other APs are around me.
Right.
And so it's a good indication that the client might want to roam.
Right. It's getting ready to hop.
Yeah, it's getting ready to hop. And the AP is saying, well, here's the ones that are close to you. And so these are good packets to look at when
right.
you get to kind of some kind of roaming problem or something, right? And so we can just say, hey, here's the neighbor report.
Yeah, like you've got, it's basically an indicator that the device knows there's a problem.
Yep, the device knows there's a problem.
Struggling. And it's going yep. through a protocol that would hint that it's going to try and change APs.
Yeah.
That's really
And so instead of going through all the Wireshark packets, we can say, here's a neighbor report. And here are the neighbors that we, you know, that it said.
Right.
That's the important information. So that's one thing with Tonic is we said, let's bring up the context. What is the context that really matters here?
Right. It's like you've narrowed down Wireshark-like yeah. behavior to what's the stuff that's specific to Wi-Fi. Like I'm trying to yep. imagine, because I've never pulled that off, what a neighbor report looks like in Wireshark. Like how would I even find that?
Yep. And the neighbor report is actually an action packet type 23 or something, right?
Right.
So you'd have to know that action 23 is a neighbor report, and then you can dig into that. And then it's quite not bad. It says, you know, here's the information, here's the neighbor's MAC address, but it still just lists out, you know, once you drill into that, all you still have is a MAC address.
Right.
Which AP was that again? You know, most people don't memorize MAC addresses. That's not really fun.
No. I mean, pretty sure.
So.
but I do, and I do like I'll do the homework to say, okay, well, this is the Mac of this phone that's current the problem, or this laptop that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So tag that Mac. This is the thing I want to see.
Yeah.
But you're right. There's other Macs in its life. What's it connecting to? You know, where is it trying to send packets to? All of that sort of stuff. But we're primarily just focused on the connectivity part of what AP is it attaching to, you know, when is it roaming, that sort of behavior. You're not even talking about what traffic it's pushing, just the sort of plumbing part of being connected.
Yeah, so that's all just the plumbing. And then we get to who it's talking to. Then we have some good overtime graphs that'll say what data rates are it using, mm-hmm. what's its MCS, what's its retry rate, how much airtime is it taking. And we have nice little graphs of that over the last 10 minutes. And so you can look at some of those different data points and see, okay, well, it's taking a lot more airtime because maybe it's, you know, signal quality went down, and it
right.
kind of correlates some of these different data points together. And these are, you know, the say 10 data points that would matter for the client over time. And you can just choose which of those time graphs you want to see, reorder them and stuff. So it's like really clean, trying to surface the really important information quickly.
Right.
And so you can go, oh, okay, you know, here's potentially the problem.
Now, my experience has been, and this is most, I've seen with both phones and laptops, it's like antennas get broken in these devices. And so they're still on Wi-Fi, but they're down an antenna. And so, you know, they're now just delicate. Like their connections are weaker and so forth. And there's really no fix other than replace the device. I mean, am I wrong? Have you run into this?
No, I think that's a good point. And a lot of times it's hard to figure that out, right?
Yeah.
That's what's wrong. And so those are the types of things we're trying to surface with. Okay, yeah, you're connected, but
badly.
Badly. Yeah. And our tool, Tonic, would show you some of those things like this client is kind of badly. And so we're trying to surface that kind of stuff, make it easier for you just to pull up the tool and it'll quickly tell you this client has a problem, that client has a problem, and let's drill into that. To that problem.
Yeah. Now, in a perfect world, it's like, find me another device just like this one in my network and show me its signals, so something I can compare it to. You know, he's struggling with an iPhone 12. Well, here's another iPhone 12 with 5 times the signal. It just has no problems. So,
yeah. Actually, yeah, my brain going now. Like, yeah. How do I tackle that?
Yeah.
So there's a packet in there called a beamforming report. Mm-hmm. And this is related to how it does the beamforming. The AP will ask the client, hey, tell me how you hear me on all of your different antennas.
Right.
And so the beamform report comes back with, you know, here's how I hear you on antenna 1, 2, 3.
Right.
And so parsing that packet, it will surface that information. We could easily say, oh, one of your antennas is totally bad.
Right. So then you get, you know, here's a negative, this is negative 40, this is negative 90, this is negative 35. It's like, guess what? Antenna 2 is busted.
Busted.
Yeah. Yep. It's nothing.
Yeah. That's interesting.
It's really, and it's certainly, it's an issue I've talked to. We don't think about the miracle it is the average smartphone. I mean, there's like 8, 9 antennas in this thing. It's a miracle.
There are. They're crammed in there. It's amazing how they work.
And there's all kinds of rules. Every phone is a compromise for antennas. Like which one's got priority, Wi-Fi versus cell. And then which ones are broken? Like your phone takes hits, it takes falls. And they're delicate. Like it's not that unusual to lose an antenna or two. And same for laptops, actually. Like at least laptops have that big flat surface that is a screen that is a beautiful place to stuff a bunch of antennas into.
Yep. Corner screens are great. But I love my old iPhone SE. I like it small.
Yeah.
You know, it's convenient. But you try to cram all the antennas into that small device and it's not awesome.
Yeah. No, and like I said, every antenna design is compromised in some degree or another. And Ryan, I got to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. When you're trying to find a Wi-Fi issue affecting your access points or figure out why a specific client won't connect to the network, you need the right tool for the job. MetaGeek has been in the Wi-Fi business for over 15 years with products like WiSpy and Insider. Their passion is helping users visualize their wireless landscape to simplify Wi-Fi troubleshooting. MetaGeek's latest Wi-Fi analysis and troubleshooting entry is MetaGeek Tonic, the perfect blend of visual Wi-Fi scanning, packet capture, and packet analysis. Tonic performs real-time packet analytics, leveraging beautiful visualizations to remove mental obstacles and promote understanding of technical issues so that the user can resolve network problems. Drill down to specific Wi-Fi clients to see all the traffic exchanged with the access point and the exact Wi-Fi frame, shown in an easy-to-read packet flow. Visit metageek.com/tonic to download a free trial and see why Tonic is the perfect tool for finding the root cause of Wi-Fi issues. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Ryan Wooding. We're talking a little bit about, we're geeking on Wi-Fi, which I really enjoy. I'm an empty nester now, so my Wi-Fi life has gotten much simpler. Daughters with Wi-Fi was much harder.
Yeah, my kids are back in school now, and it's much easier now to get work done during the day. Before, it was like, all of a sudden, there's 4 of us in the family all doing Zoom calls or something.
Right.
It's like, oh, it's not working very well.
Yeah, and you know what? That 20 megabit upstream was just barely enough.
Oh, you have 20? I have 2 or 3 upstream.
Yeah, no, you've got problems, no question. That's one call, realistically.
Yep.
So Tonic as a tool to analyze Wi-Fi traffic. Now, does it matter? How are you doing this? Do we actually loading software on the APs or anything? Or are you just reading the radiation?
That is a great question. So we have Tonic right now is just for Windows. We're working on cross-platform with .NET 6.
Okay.
Waiting for Maui. And I think you've had some conversations on your show about Maui.
On the .NET Rock side, we've talked about Maui and the fact that it got seriously delayed. And it speaks to the fact of talk about a desktop app, you know.
Yeah.
For me in IT, like I don't want to deploy desktop apps. I've done nothing but web, but there are certain bits of software that need a client. And boy, Wi-Fi analysis is one of them. So here's my hypocritical self. As head of IT, I'm pushing the devs, just make web apps, please. I don't want to deal with deployments and stuff. But for my machine, I need time.
Right? Yeah. Because we do need to collect those packets natively on the machine.
You're poking into the Wi-Fi drivers of the Windows machine and ultimately others.
Yeah, and we're also using special packet capture adapters. Mm-hmm. There's a couple different Realtek Wi-Fi chipsets that we support.
Right.
And so if you have those USB adapters, then we can pull packets.
Oh, I see.
But we have to swap the drivers for those devices and stuff. So it's definitely getting deep into the system.
So I'm probably going to buy one of these Realtek USB Wi-Fi adapters for my machine for this purpose. The chances that it's in my machine are low.
Yeah. And I mean, your listeners can't see, but here's just a few of them. They're just pretty standard USB Wi-Fi adapters.
Yeah. And so you maintain a list of like own one, and they're not expensive either.
No, I mean, the cheapest one here is like $30. Most expensive is maybe $75.
Yeah.
And we sell some on our website. You can buy them on Amazon, Best Buy.
Yeah.
You know, wherever.
That hard to come by. And so plug that into the machine, and that's kind of nice. And then you're not messing with the driver of the laptop. You're just messing with the driver for the USB device. So.
Yep. So your laptop still has good Wi-Fi communication. You're still on the network.
So you actually leave both on?
Yeah.
So my regular Wi-Fi, my laptop stays on. I plug this thing in. You're then utilizing that to do analysis on the traffic.
Yep.
That's interesting.
And you can plug in up to three adapters right now. And so what's kind of nice with that is with three adapters, if you follow a client, we have one radio that stays on the channel the client's on.
Right.
We have a couple other radios that can just scan everything, or what we're working on is, can we guess what channel you might jump to and just set a radio on that channel as well? And so we can use those three different adapters to get smart about what channels we should be capturing on based on the client that you're trying to follow.
That's very clever. So you read the Good Neighbor report, say it's going to pick this one, prep that other radio to watch that
exactly.
happen.
Yep.
So
yep.
Rather than you now go back to scan and try and figure out where to go.
Yeah, and if we have three, we have one that just stays scanning just in case they go somewhere, you know, that we're not ready for.
All right. I now want this just for the antenna sticking out of the machine, right? Like, it's very cool. Geeky.
It is geeky, like, for sure.
I look like I'm analyzing Wi-Fi traffic. Look at all the antennas.
Yep. I mean, a USB-C to USB-A, four-port adapter, so I can just Velcro that to my laptop, and you're like, total geek.
Yeah. You look like you're up to something nefarious. Nobody needs that many antennas. There's nothing good could be happening right now. But it totally makes sense to me that that's how you'd end up doing that. Is you've got one watching the device, one anticipating where it's going to go, and one is watching everything else that's going on. It's not actually madness. But boy, talk about a lot of different signals being handled at once. Like, that's a busy machine.
Yeah, it's a busy machine. And, you know, there's a bit of power stuff going on there, but most laptops these days can handle it. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, you're not doing this for hours either, to me, it seems.
No, it should be, you know, 10, 20 minutes, get in there, troubleshoot, be done. Or if you just want to kind of do an analysis of, you know, walk around, see if there's any issues, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's the typical task here is it's a device that's problematic as opposed to, well, I mean, normally I think of you for Wi-Fi Spy and Insider, where it's like, how is the overall health of my Wi-Fi space? Like, do we have weird SSIDs hanging around? You know, do we have symmetric good coverage? Like, where are the dark spots in my network? Like, that's what I've always used your tools for.
Yeah, we're kind of doing both. I think this tool is definitely really good at the troubleshooting side. Mm-hmm. I think it also has some good stuff for just that kind of general Wi-Fi management side.
Right.
And because one thing that we can look at is the clients that are connecting to your network, are they connecting with strong signals?
Right.
Or is it look like they're connecting to an AP that's far away?
Yeah. And is that just a bad choice thing or saturated channel? Like, well, why would they connect to a long-range IP rather than the close one?
Well, the clients are stupid. I mean, honestly, a lot of them.
I thought you were going to go with the it depends there, Ryan, for sure. But yeah, dumb things happen.
Yeah. And so one good example, Boise State Computer Science Department. Mm-hmm. They're in a big building on the third and fourth floors. There's one big stairwell that walks up, right? So you come up the stairs and everybody connects to that first AP at the stairs.
Because they're on their way up. And that's automatic connect. Right.
And then you go down the hall to your classroom, to your research lab, wherever you're going. But if you can still hear that AP,
right,
a lot of those clients stick. Even though there's an AP in every classroom,
They're not using it.
That AP that's right at the stairs is just swamped.
Yeah, for no good reason.
Yeah, and in Wi-Fi, it's the client's choice of who they're connected to.
Yeah.
Which is part of the problem, right? And so there's a lot of things that they've tried to do to encourage the clients to move, convince the clients to move and different things. But at the end of the day, it's the client's choice.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're talking, you know, some cheap Android phones or cheap Chromebooks and stuff like that, you know,
when you,
they connect, they do their thing. They're, you know,
you almost want to take that stairwell AP out.
Yeah. Right. And a couple of years ago, I was helping with my daughter's spelling tests in her classroom in third grade. And, you know, of course, I'm a geek. And so I got my laptop there and I, you know, I would bring it out and kind of see what's going on. And it was
you're
crazy.
Sniffing,
like,
you're sniffing people's networks.
Yeah. Shh, don't tell the school district. I'm probably not supposed to do that. You know, there's an AP in every classroom.
Yep.
And it's an old building, all brick, but you still had Chromebooks in my daughter's class upstairs in the corner connected to the AP downstairs on the other side of the school.
Yeah.
They could hear that signal. They were fine. I don't know how you fix that. I mean, do you just turn off the whole network in the middle of the night for 2 minutes?
Yeah. Just so they're they reassessing their location.
Yep. Because these Chromebooks, they're always on. I mean, they're always, you know, at least in sleep mode or something, right?
Yeah.
In the classroom.
And they're clinging to that bad network
behavior.
Yeah,
they're clinging.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. That's an interesting report, a cling report, right? It just says, what are devices that are hanging on to APs that are not the optimal AP for them? And how long have they hung on to it for?
Yeah.
Because in that sense, as an IT person, just walking around a building, I just flip each one of those machines off and on.
Yeah.
You know, or turn their Wi-Fi off and make them renegotiate.
Yep. Yep.
You know, it's not that I'm not busy enough, but I'm wondering how many tickets I would eliminate just by, send the junior guy around with a list of all the poorly connected clients. And it's like,
yeah. And the teacher workaround on some of those was, you know, every time they brought out the Chromebooks in a class of Z25, two of them would be able to connect, wouldn't be able to do something. So they walk out in the hall, they sign in the hall, and they come back in the classroom. That was her solution. I don't know. It seemed to work. But
as opposed to shut off the Wi-Fi, turn it back on, and connect to the local AP.
Yep. Yep.
They just don't. They don't understand.
Mm-mm.
Then again, even if I disable Wi-Fi on a device like that, is it still clinging to, is it still caching? This was the last AP I connected to, and when I bring it back, it's going to reconnect to it?
Might. Most, I don't think would. So I think most would choose the closest.
Check the local signals, take the highest strength one, connect to it.
Yep.
Yeah, so cycling Wi-Fi is more, I don't know they know how to do that, as opposed to not having to do any of that, just, it's actually more efficient to walk out of the classroom.
Right.
And also setting that person up for a bad experience, right? The signal was weak enough they couldn't log in the classroom. So you logged them in the hallway and then went back in the classroom.
Yeah. And so there'd be times where of the 25 students, one or two took 10, 20 minutes to actually get their machine to work. And then they're on the next topic, right?
Yeah. Everything's lost.
Yeah.
Is the protocol wrong? I mean, I'm kind of I understand why it's client's privilege. It's like, should APs be able to acknowledge it, or should APs be looking at this and going, I'm going to, Ubiquity is good for this. You can actually look at a client list and tell that client, disconnect them from the Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, so you can't make them renegotiate, but you can kick them off. And presumably then they would renegotiate.
Yeah. You can kick them off. And sometimes they try to do things when they first connect called like band steering.
Right.
And so basically they'll say, okay, if you do 5 gigahertz and 2.4, the 2.4 is going to respond to you, but really delayed.
Yeah.
And so you heard the 5 gigahertz first and things like that, and also kick them off. And so, you know, the network, the APs are trying to be smarter about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes we're still dealing with $200 Chromebooks. They have the cheapest Wi-Fi chips in there, and there's not a lot of logic in there or smarts to say, let's do something better.
Yeah. Those basic units are presuming a one AP world. And there's only one thing to connect to and never think about that. They don't think about mesh. They certainly don't think about band steered 5 and 2.4. Right, which I think we all agree now is the way to go. It's like, stop separating 5 from 2.4, which I'm sure we'll get some nasty comments from, because
we will.
Well, old school IT folks making Wi-Fi have split 5 and 2.4 for a long time. Heck, I admit to doing it. But the latest setups I've done in places, I put them together. And generally speaking, you get a better result.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And most of your clients should go to 5 gigahertz, and most of the time that works fine. And I've even seen my laptop a couple times drop to 2.4, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
But it goes back to 5 gigahertz and it's fine.
Yeah. And it's in general, if it can handle 5, it'll try and use 5, and it's smart enough to do that. And if it's one of those cheap chipsets. Well, it only has 2.4 anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And I know in Windows, at least, there's some settings you can, you know, if you want to tinker with your settings, you can go in there and say preferred band, roaming aggressiveness, and do different things like that
right.
to dial it in. It's beyond most home users.
Yeah, certainly beyond most
home users. But it is possible.
But it's something for IT to do. Yeah. How are you feeling about Wi-Fi 6?
Oh, we're a little bit behind on Wi-Fi 6 as far as analysis, but it's
sure.
For a long time, it's like, well, it's out there, you know, there's been some announcements, but I think it's real now. I think.
Yeah. I mean, certainly I can get APs. I don't see a lot of production laptops and things with it yet.
Yeah. And so we also need to kind of distinguish between 6 and 6E.
Right.
And the way I treat it, like 6E, the E for extended, let's call that extended for 7 gigahertz stuff, you know, the 6 to 7 gigahertz band, not much of that. I was at the Wireless LAN Professionals Conference last week before. Mm-hmm. And there was some AP vendors there talking about their APs that are coming for 6E. And so that's definitely in the works, but it's going to be a ways out.
Yeah.
And even in, you know, Wi-Fi 6, starting to see some devices, starting to see it in use mm-hmm. a little bit. And I think it has some really good stuff, and I'm pretty excited for it because in Wi-Fi 5, the whole thing was high throughput.
Yeah.
And how do we get faster rates? In Wi-Fi 6, it's high efficiency. And how do we get more clients connected to the network and overall better efficiency in a network?
Yeah.
Versus just how do we tell a client to go faster?
Yeah. Multiple APs and multiple clients, you know, be better at that. It's the smarter yeah. scaling model versus it's more of a scale out versus scale up mindset, it seems.
Yep. Yep. And they did some really good things in there for multiple clients to talk at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And before it was always, you know, one can talk at a time. And now they have ways to split the channel into smaller chunks so that multiple clients can talk. And so I think it's going to be really good, especially in office environments.
Yeah.
I think for home networks, it's not really going to matter.
Not going to matter. Yeah. And good luck buying any Wi-Fi 6 stuff right now anyway.
Yeah. Right.
You know, the supply chain impact is the newest stuff or it's the hardest to come by, it seems.
Yeah, definitely.
But
definitely.
I appreciate your thoughts on all that. So Tonic is the new product, and well, it sounds like it's well worth the look. And we will include links to in the show notes for folks who want to take a peek. I thought Signify for Business was cool, man, but clearly you're not done. You still have some cool, great ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, there's always stuff to build. Yeah. We are going to get back to Signify, spend some more time on that. A couple things we're working on are enterprise authentication.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of one of the things we've heard a lot of need for. And then also better identification of where the problem could be. Is it in the home Wi-Fi, the LAN, the ISP? You know, where in the whole connection is the problem, if there's a problem? And so we have some good ideas on how to fix Signify Business and make it better. And so that's going to be our next round of things to do.
You know, in N-tier software, we had the tool. We started getting good tooling for monitoring, figuring out, is it the client? Is it the mid-tier? Is it the back-end? You know, is it the WAN connection? It's strange that it seems so evident the moment you say that. It's like, why haven't we done that for Wi-Fi? Because it's all the same problem, arguably more.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
People often blame the Wi-Fi for a back-end server that's not doing well.
Yeah.
Because how do you tell?
Yep. And with Signify, where we have data coming in from multiple, say, remote employees,
mm-hmm.
if half of them have one ISP and half have the other, and we know which ISP it is, and so, you know, it's pretty easy for us to start getting in there and figuring out where the problem is.
Right.
And also, if we start doing kind of like trace route ping and stuff in the back end, you can see where the connection starts having issues and things like that.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Get ahead of the service calls. It's like, oh, yes, you're on Comcast and they seem to be having a problem today.
Yep.
All my my remotes using Comcast are struggling. And I'm calling you out, Comcast, because that's all I ever hear. We don't have it up in Canada. Well, Ryan, thanks so much for coming back on the show. Really interesting thinking about being better at diagnosing Wi-Fi and understanding more deeply about that. I'm grateful for what you guys are doing.
Thanks. It's always great to catch up with you and chat about all the Wi-Fi and geek out.
All the geeky stuff, for sure. And thanks for listening to the show, and we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.